Testing 1, 2, 3, testing. Say something. John, say something.
Testing 1, 2, 1.
Just talk like you normally would. Okay.
Test 1, 1, 2, 1, 2.
That's
test.
Fine.
It's recording.
Well, I don't really know why we're getting an echo on our playback, but we definitely are.
It's okay.
We'll try to deal with it.
Make the best of it.
Yeah. This is, let me bring up my cheat sheet. Okay, you're listening to WOZOLP 103.9 FM live in Knoxville, Tennessee. This is the Digital Free Thought Radio Hour. I'm Doubter 5 with my guest and author, John D. Bold. Welcome to the show.
Glad to be on.
This is an atheism call-in TV radio show. We have a TV show, but it's not it. And we'll be talking about atheism, free thought, humanism, rational thought, and science. And conversely, we'll also be talking about religion, religious faiths, gods, holy books, and superstition. And despite what Steve Martin would have you think, there are an awful lot of atheist songs, and you'll be hearing some of them on this program and generally on this station. We'll also be talking about atheist and rationalist groups that are here in Knoxville and how you might be able to connect with them. And did you know there was also an atheist television show broadcasting here in Knoxville and has been for 6 years? And we'll be talking about that too. Remember, this is a call-in show, and if you'd like to call in and join the conversation, you can at 865-333-5937, and we'd be happy to hear from you. The line is open, and will be until somebody calls. Today's topic is a new book by my guest, John Bold. Would you like to explain to our audience what your new book is all about?
It's called Seeds of Doubt, 200 Questions Every Christian Needs to Answer. It's kind of a something I've always thought about doing. I thought it'd be good to write a book that basically goes down a list of systematically just kind of prodding evangelicals' minds to make them actually think about what they believe. Because I think that one of the reasons they believe what they believe is they don't take time to think about it. So I guess I'll just read a little bit of the first part of it here. It begins by quoting Daniel C. Dennett. Philosophy is questions that may never be answered. Religion is answers that may never be questions. May never be questioned.
Mm-hmm.
Many times the reason people are Christians is because they do not think about what they believe. They're programmed with this ideology at an early age, and therefore do not question it. Below is a series of questions, 200 of them, designed to provoke Christians to think about what it is they currently believe. A series of questions designed to plant seeds of doubt.
Which is the name of your book, Seeds of Doubt. Now, why is it you think that Christians need to have this book to have questions like that? Shouldn't they just be able to answer them themselves?
There are many arguments out there that basically says that people should be able to believe what they want to believe. And by and large, I think that should be true, that people should be free to believe whatever it is they want to believe. But as far as being intellectually honest about what you believe and actually believing things that are true versus believing things that are not true because they make you feel good, I think that it's always better to believe what is true and rational and makes sense as opposed to, this helps me through life as a coping mechanism, so I'm gonna believe it, and if I ever encounter opposition to it that's makes me think about it, I'm gonna double down on it and just try to continue believing it no matter what the evidence says otherwise.
Yeah, well, a lot of people would say that religion is definitely a coping mechanism and it would help them day to day. What's wrong with that?
Actually, on the surface, there may be nothing that seems wrong with it because it does help them. If it helps them, there are harms and benefits to it. If it helps you throughout life, yes, in one aspect it's okay to believe. But as far as believing what is true and conform with reality, and just I would much rather believe things that are true than adhere to some kind of a fantasy, because it helps me through life.
Yeah, yeah, it gives you comfort.
Yeah, it's just kind of a
good example. An example I would think of is like, let's say that your child is sick, deathly ill. You might use faith to think that he's going to get okay. You know, we don't have to worry about it. If God is watching over us, he's going to take care of this thing, and which is of course what Christian Scientists do. They pray to God, they put it in God's hand, and many times the child just goes on and dies from an illness that's easily treatable. And in other words, when they use faith, they don't track to reality, or doesn't necessarily track to reality. It may feel good at the time, it may help you cope for the time being, but if it doesn't track to reality, it can come back and bite you.
As they say, you know, may make you feel good, but so does peeing on yourself and opiates and cocaine. So, you know, There's that.
Mm-hmm. Anyway, give us another question out of your
book. Okay. I'll go ahead and read some of the first questions in the series. There are 200 questions.
Go ahead. Sorry.
It begins by saying, number one is, on a scale of 1 to 100, with 1 being completely unsure and 100 being absolutely certain, how sure are you that your views on God, Christianity, and the Bible are accurate? Number two, describe the process that led you becoming a Christian. How old were you when you became a Christian? When did you have your biggest doubt about your faith, and what was it?
Okay, let's stop there and discuss those just a little bit. What do you hope that those first two questions or three questions will reveal?
Yeah, the first question is basically to establish where they are when I begin the series of questions. And most likely they'll say something like, well, 100.
Yeah.
I believe 100%.
And if they don't, the preacher certainly will.
Yeah.
They'll say 100.
Yeah. You know,
they sell certainty.
Their system rewards certainty.
Mm-hmm.
And I would say that any system that rewards certainty, you should be skeptical of.
Very. Especially when they offer absolutely no evidence. They'll say the Bible's the evidence, but really the Bible is the claim. They're just repeating the claim. Yeah. Anyway, so the next couple of questions was about how you start becoming a Christian and when you started becoming a Christian.
Number two is describe the process that led you to becoming a Christian. And one of the reasons I chose this as a second question is because most people are emotionally manipulated into believing it. They're emotionally primed through fear, guilt, shame, unconditional love, hope, just a myriad of an emotional roller coaster that just, you know, it's worse than what insurance salesmen do.
Yeah, and that's even when they've reached the age of reason. Most people come to Christianity when they're still a child and they're not reached that age of questioning and logical development.
Yeah, I know I was six when I prayed the salvation prayer.
Mm-hmm.
And, it was just...
But that was several years after you started being indoctrinated.
Yeah.
And all of that is way before you could actually question it, had the mental facilities to question it.
Yeah. Number three is, how old were you when you became a Christian? Because like you said, many times there are early conversions, early childhood conversions. And, you know, many times kids aren't able to think clearly. And you know, they have basically their parents, you know, kind of pressuring them into, you know, ushering them to, you know, walk down the aisle and accept Jesus as a personal savior and believe or burn and things like that.
Uh-huh.
Number four is, when did you have your biggest doubt about your faith and what was it? And one of what reasons I structure it this way is I kind of go through a process of, you know, asking them easy questions and kind of stagger it with more hard questions that kind of, you know, come out of nowhere and kind of prod them to think about it.
Answer that one about yourself then.
Sure. When did you have your biggest doubt about your faith and what was it?
Uh-huh.
That one. Back when I was a Christian, my first doubt that I had was when I was in college and I was taking an introduction to philosophy course. And the professor asked us to list in order of realness the desk at the front of the room, the professor, ourselves, and God. And I got to thinking about it, and I was like, well, there's more evidence for the desk and the professor and myself than there is.
Right.
Than there is God. Yeah. So that kind of started to you know, as the book said, planting the seeds of doubt in my mind.
Well, what would you say to people who point to the clouds and the trees and the sunset and the waves on the beach to say that right there is proof of God?
Yeah, it's beauty, the indescribable, unfathomable beauty of our universe. The complexity of it. Yeah.
Yeah.
Couldn't happen by, you know, any other source, but, you know, some divine being, which is just couldn't be further from the truth. It's basically, you know, this is what primitive man thought up years ago, thousands of years ago, and you know, they were mistaken. So if I had to go with an explanation that was more recent and updated based on actual evidence that's come to light in recent times, rather than based it on something thousands of years ago that people, you know, they didn't have toilet paper, they didn't have proper sanitary measures.
Sure.
Not
only that, but it's a logical fallacy, and that they're presupposing the answer in the statement that they're making. They presuppose that God exists and then point to the sunset and said, see, because that sunset is there, it shows you that God exists.
Yeah.
Even though it's circular, you know, it's they put the proof in the statement.
They're grasping at straws. They're just basically trying to grab anything they can to reinforce their own beliefs and say that, you know, this is the reason why.
Another way to think about it, I mean, if you don't believe what I was just saying about that, say, well, look at that sunset. It's beautiful. It just goes to show you that that pixies exist.
Yeah.
You know, pixies make sunsets.
Right. And the question about pixies is, do pixies want you to know they exist so badly that they will torture you forever if you do not believe they exist?
And they want 10% of your income.
Yeah. Do pixies reward you with eternal bliss if you believe they exist?
Yeah.
Not according to any stories about pixies I know. And essentially, God does that. So, you know, if God did reward you like that and punish you like that for not believing or believing in his existence, there would be just, God would be doing a lot more than he's doing right now, which is nothing,
right?
Because he doesn't exist.
Right. And we've been able to find basically a natural cause for any of the things that you would point to, like trees and sunsets and clouds. We know now what causes those things. But back when religion was born, when religion and belief systems came about, those were questions that had no answers, and people had to make up the answers and propose an agency to make them. Well, so what other questions would you be asking?
See, I've got about
Christians to ask.
I've got about 200 here, so I've definitely got some material we can use. I'll just go down the list until we run out of time, as it sounds. Number four was, when did you have your biggest doubt about your faith, and what was it? And number five was, what did you do when this happened? So, you know, when faced with the dilemma of, you know, evidence or doubt, skepticism, did you entertain it? Did you do research into the opposition that, you know, was kind of nudging you in the direction of doubting your faith? Or did you double down and just kind of, you know, I believe what I believe, I know what I know, I know that I know that I know that I know.
Yeah, fear pushes a lot of people to just double down. The fear of hell, for example. Think doubting itself is a sin in most religions. Yeah. If you doubt, then you're performing an act against God. You've got to have faith. How many times do they say that you have to have faith in the Bible? And the real problem there is that we have never even proven that people have souls, much less that they go anywhere after we die or survive our deaths.
Yeah. Yep. Let's see, move on to the next question here. Is your religion the same as your parents? And that's basically a question to them that, you know, is it a coincidence that, you know, the religion you believe has been passed on to you through basically through hereditary means?
The answer is yes, it basically means that have you ever examined your religion is no.
Yep.
So, you know, most people come to their religion through their parents, and they've never examined it. They just take their parents' word for it that it's true.
Most times, kind of like football. You know, wherever you grew up around, you know, if you grew up in the South in Knoxville, Tennessee, go Vols, you know. Then
if you grew up
in you're Chicago. Vols fan. If you grew up in Alabama, then you're an Alabama fan. If you're,
you never mentioned Chicago.
Yeah. So yeah, I'm not really paying too much attention to sports. I think it's more of a tribalism thing that people get to attach to, and they associate their self-worth based upon whether their team has lost or won. And if they won, they think it's a sense of accomplishment for themselves.
Yeah.
And if they lost, then it's the end of the world. And maybe I'll change teams so I don't have to feel so bad about myself.
Or those chain shirts, because that's not a lucky shirt.
Yeah. Wearing my lucky shirt today.
Yeah. So that's another question. Yeah.
Yep.
By the way, his actually says lucky shirt across the front.
Yeah, I have several of these, and one of the reasons I wear it is because it, kind of, actually, honestly, to tell you the truth, and I will admit this, one of the reasons I wear this shirt is because of superstitious reasons, but I will admit that I am being superstitious because it does make me feel lucky. But the thing about that is, compared to what religious people believe, I will admit that, yes, this is a faulty belief.
Mm-hmm.
But honestly, it kind of, you know, makes me feel more lucky, and I seem to notice more opportunities this way.
Mm-hmm.
But I will admit that I am being superstitious. I will admit that, yes, one of the things I'm doing by wearing this shirt, it's kind of silly.
Yeah.
I will admit that.
Yeah. But it's fun at the same time to indulge it.
Exactly. You know?
But,
and I will admit that I may be faulty in that reasoning.
Yeah.
You
but
know?
At the same time, you admit it and you see the fault.
Yeah, exactly. You know? So I can be, I can admit my own biases in that aspect. Number seven is, can you describe what happened when you prayed the salvation prayer? As in, you know, did any kind of physiological change happen? Did you feel the Holy Spirit enter you? Did you, you know, have some kind of an emotional response? Or did nothing happen, which is what happens most of the time when you pray the salvation prayer, nothing happens.
Right.
Because nothing does go on inside your body or
why would
in
that
the spirit
be?
World.
Yeah. If you prayed the prayer and nothing happened, why would that be? Stop and examine that.
Yeah.
And even if you do feel something, according to the logical flow of post hoc, propter hoc, you've got to make sure that what you feel is because of what you did and because of the definition, define the experience by your preacher. He says the Holy Ghost entered you. But was it really the Holy Ghost, or was it the emotional pressure and release from the people closest to you pressuring you to do it, and then once you've done it, you don't feel the pressure anymore? Plus, you may have the church music swelling in the background and everybody hallelujahing and, you know, just basically giving you support, and your emotional release could have come from that.
Yeah. And going back to the fact that, you know, the whole thing about the lucky shirt and then, you know, that kind of being silly, but at the same time, kind of, you know, having a positive impact on your mental state to think that you are lucky and, you know, all that. One of the things I do is I have OCD, which means that I basically check things. If I'm locking my car, I will check my car door several times.
Mm-hmm.
And I know that's irrational because, you know, I'm just compelled to check it over and over again. And I know that's irrational. It's like a neurological thing going on with me. But, you know, I can admit that, yes, that is irrational. And, you know, I just wish that Christians would have the same kind of intellectual honesty with themselves that, you know, even if they believe something, it might be irrational. But no, they don't. They say that, you know, it's not irrational. They deny the fact that they're, you know, believing something and doing something that isn't really in conforming with what is rational thought.
No, right. Hardly you get that kind of response, though, from a religious. And when you do get that kind of response, when they do realize that what they're doing is playing on these emotions rather than logic, they start examining them, and they end up after a couple of years either being an agnostic or an atheist. I know that a lot of people in our group, the Atheist Society of Knoxville and the Rationalists, used to be religious, but they were able to think their way out of it. They didn't reason their way out of it. It does and can happen.
Another kind of pseudo belief I'd like to address that I may adhere to or that I do adhere to is the belief in the law of attraction. There are many misconceptions about the law of attraction. I recently wrote a book about the law of attraction called Law of Attraction Plus Action. It's my sixth book. Seeds
Law of Attraction and what?
Law of Attraction Plus Action.
Plus Action.
Law of Attraction Plus Action. Law of Attraction basically states that whatever you focus on, what you're grateful for, and what you speak about, you get more of.
That sounds like Oprah Winfrey's The Answer.
You're right. The secret, right?
Yeah.
And there are many misconceptions about this. One of the things I disagree with certain people who are in the law of attraction community is this whole anthropomorphizing of the universe. Some people say regarding The Secret or the law of attraction that mm-hmm. the universe wants what's best for you. No, the universe doesn't care what you think. No.
It's trying to kill you 99.99% of the time.
You're right. As far as my own concept of law of attraction goes, it's basically wherever you focus on, you notice more, which is a very real thing. If you buy a certain car, a certain color and a certain make and model, you will notice that car, color, make and model everywhere else because you're so used to being in it. Hey, there's another car. Is it that there are more cars out there that are like yours? No, it's not. It's just your subconscious mind has been programmed to mm-hmm. notice that kind of thing. Mm-hmm. So regarding the law of attraction is if you focus on something, you're more likely to pick up on opportunities that present itself. And just regarding the whole process of me writing the book, I spent maybe a year and a half writing it, and it's basically changed my life. I've narrowed my focus on my goals and things like that, and I do positive affirmations, which kind of psych myself into believing I have stronger abilities than maybe stronger abilities than I actually have.
Yeah.
But the more you believe in your ability to do something, the more likely you are able to do it.
Right, you'll have confidence to carry it through.
Yeah.
As a matter of fact, if you ever go see motivational speakers like Zig Ziglar and them, that's one of the main things that they've come down on. One of the pillars of their platform for improving yourself is to have confidence in yourself.
That's right.
But that doesn't mean have irrational confidence in yourself. Like you don't want to have confidence in yourself that you can fly and jump off a cliff.
Yeah.
I mean, be rational about it, but use that confidence to help you go forward.
Yeah. And honestly, some of the affirmations I've developed, I actually spoke about this at one of the Sunday assemblies here in Knoxville. It's called Bold Affirmations, which is kind of a play on my pseudonym's last name, Bold mm-hmm. Affirmations.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. Which is what you do is you state that the quality you want to develop, the person who has exemplified it the most, and when they most exemplified it. So, example, one of the things I want to do is become a better writer, and these are pretty grandiose affirmations,
mm-hmm.
but they do the trick because they stand out. And they get stuck in your mind,
mm-hmm.
and even though I know that some of these things aren't true, I kind of speak them to myself to kind of psych myself into becoming a better writer.
You take the strength from it.
The ability.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And one of my affirmations is that based on what I want to happen, a better writer, the writing ability. The best driver out there is obviously Christopher Hitchens. Can I get an amen mm-hmm. on that?
Amen.
Raw man.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Can I get a Dawkins on that?
Dawkins.
Writing ability, Christopher Hitchens, and when he's best at writing. So one of my affirmations is I have the writing ability of Christopher Hitchens with a lit cigarette, a bottle of Johnny Walker Black, and an illegal prescription of Adderall XR. Yes, I know that's not true, but I say that to myself to psych myself up into having that ability.
Put those words on the paper.
Yeah,
yeah. You mentioned Daniel Dennett early in your book. I saw a TED Talk with him one time, and he said that whenever you repeat something, you make another copy of it in your brain.
Yeah.
Whenever you repeat something, you make another copy of it in your brain. And if you hear it repeatedly, you make another copy of it in your brain. And he said that just like I did several times, just to make the point. And
How many times did he say it?
He probably said it five times.
Five times, okay.
Yeah. But it certainly stuck in my mind. And these affirmations are being stuck in your mind because you're placing them in your mind as copies, and they'll help you get your confidence when it's time to sit down and write.
Exactly. And I've discovered that if you say things, see what is it? Say it three times, hear it twice. To make it rhyme, say it thrice, hear it twice. Mm. If you say affirmations three times, that's probably the ideal number of times to say it to get it stuck in your head. If you hear it, the best number of times to say it is twice. And that's kind of, you know, the Goldilocks zone as far as trying to reinforce it in your own mind. Mm-hmm. Yet that's based on my own experience. That's based on what has worked for me. Mm-hmm. I haven't necessarily done the research as far as, you know, focus groups and studies and things like that. But that's just kind of you know, what works best for me. But it seems to be pretty effective.
When I listen to a lot of podcasts and I read a lot. And one of the things, if I hear a phrase that I want to keep in my mind and be able to call up and use again, I'll repeat it to. I'll stop the podcast and repeat it to myself three or four times, just to get my tongue used to saying it. Like people will say, why do you have any reason to be moral? Well, a human emotion, empathy and compassion. Empathy and compassion. I said that to myself so many times just so I could get that phrase, because it's the crux of the matter. Why do we need morals in a society with, you know, where would we point if we don't have God or the Bible or whatever? Well, human empathy and compassion is enough to lay a foundation for morals in any society. And everybody has it to some extent. Yeah. We're at the bottom of the hour. I better make a station identification. And also, we need to talk about our groups a little bit. You're listening to WOZOLP 103.9 FM live in Knoxville, Tennessee. This is the Digital Free Thought Radio Hour, and I'm Doubter 5, and with me is my guest and author, John D. Bold. We're going to try to see if we can get this... message to play without echoing. I've tried to find the FX over there, but I can't find it. So we'll see if it echoes. If it echoes, we may let it play or stop it. We'll see. Back in a minute.
If you live in or around the Knoxville area and are questioning your religious beliefs, or simply
mics are off.
One less God than everyone else.
Let's let that record.
Good job.
The Atheist Society of Knoxville is a fun and friendly group of people.
The volume on it's low, so I have to turn it up to play it. Symphony of Science song, so good.
I actually might want to do this more often. If you'd like for me to be on the show more often, so I want to. I'm thinking about doing my own podcast sometime. So I'm kind of trying to practice for that. So,
see how many Symphony of Science songs I've got here.
Yeah,
all of these. Have you ever heard them? Go on YouTube and watch them. They got some good video behind them too. Symphony of Science. Like my hat. I wonder if somebody. That looks like my hat. I wonder if somebody stuck it up there.
Is it?
I don't know. Can't tell.
Is it your hat now?
Maybe. I bought another one. I've actually got like three of them like that.
Crucified your hat to the ceiling. It's not right. Yeah. Wouldn't stand for that shit. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Trying to cuss in here because I'm... You know,
trying to what?
I can't cuss in here, right?
Right. Okay. And pissing. I wondered about that, but I didn't want to stop. And
did I say piss?
Yeah.
I'm sorry. I'm sorry, man.
It was one of the first things. But it's no big deal. Like I say, they tell us that if you hear something like that, just go on. Don't stop. Don't make a big thing out of it.
You know? Yeah, so just kind of avoid swear words altogether.
Yeah.
Okay. I'm actually wanting to do a podcast where
I can. Fine, huh?
Yeah, I'm wanting to do a podcast where I can cuss, like a YouTube yes. kind of thing, you know?
Yeah.
So
I know what you mean.
Yeah, and I'll have you on. I'll promote you. But to tell you what, man, I am going to possibly start a publishing house. What do you think?
Go for it. Why not?
And I'd like to get you on board if you wanted to, you know, publish Atheism, What's It All About. You know, seriously.
Yeah, sure. Do you still want to do the audio on my book?
Yeah.
Okay. Well, why don't you do a chapter on here? Cool. Yeah. I've been meaning to do it for a year now.
Yeah. I don't know. I've kind of shied away from it a little bit. I recorded half of Nothing Sacred so far.
And half of a what?
Half of Nothing Sacred, my first atheist book I did. And I've noticed that I enjoy the whole comedic audiobooks a lot more than the straight reads, you know. But yeah, I like the way your book reads, so I'm willing to do it.
Okay.
So,
yeah. I'm going to have to go back up on the volume as soon as this ends. Goes to the next one.
Do you have a favorite chapter you've ever read in your book?
It's kind of a long one.
I think one of the things you do extremely well is you ask, the way you ask questions, not many people can pull that off. You do that extremely well. And you do it kind of like a matter-of-fact way. Have you noticed that about yourself? Did you do that? It's kind of like you're kind of like, and what about this? And what about that? And it works. You know,
whichever chapter you want. Let me go back. And we're back. This is WOZOLP 103.9 FM live in Knoxville, Tennessee. This is the Digital Free Thought Radio Hour. My name is Doubter Five, and I have a guest today, and guest and author, John D. Bold. Welcome to the show. Again.
Glad to be on here.
Yeah. Let's just take a minute to talk about the different atheists and the rationalist groups here in Knoxville before we go on. The first is the Atheist Society of Knoxville. We meet every Tuesday in the Old City at Barley's Tap Room and Pizzeria about 5:30 or 6 for happy hour and dinner and conversation. You're welcome to join us if you plan to come. Please don't preach, proselytize, provoke, or punch, but otherwise you're welcome. Now, the rationalists of East Tennessee meet the first and third Sunday at the Pellissippi Campus near the Pellissippi Parkway in Hardin Valley Road. You show up there if you will, about 10:15. They usually get the presentations underway about 10:30 a.m. on Sunday. That's the first and third Sunday. They also have a book club that meets at 2 o'clock at Books a Million on Walker Springs Road. That's there every month on the second Sunday at 2 o'clock. And be happy to have you there too. The television show that we spoke about earlier is the Free Thought Forum TV show. It's broadcast on community TV. That's ctvknox.org. You can watch it streaming online. Or you can watch it on Comcast Channel 12. It's a live call-in show. You're more than welcome to call in and talk to the hosts during the show. That's Free Thought Forum, Community Access TV, Tuesdays from 5 to 6. And I guess that's about it. Welcome back to the show. Do you want to tell us a little bit more about your book?
Sure. I've actually got another book coming out as well. A book that hit recently. It's called No Time for Church. Have you seen me advertise that one on Facebook yet?
I haven't seen that.
It's a very short book as well. It's maybe 3,500 words. It's called No Time for Church. It's, mm-hmm. it's the best of Mike Cook. It's about a, it's an interview with a friend of mine who is just a kind of a viral internet sensation. He's just a very, very funny guy. He's good enough to let me interview him. And one of the things he does is he comes up with church excuses every Sunday. He'll say, hey, Mike, would you like to join us in church today? And just come up with like this very creative, just alternative of something horrible he'd rather do than go to church. Have you seen him on Facebook?
No, this guy, can you come up with an example?
If I can think of one, like I said, they're pretty vulgar, which is one of the reasons I like them. But I don't know if I could say them on.
The FCC wouldn't like you.
say them on the air. But I think I might be able to say one. No, that involves drug use. So
he had to eliminate that one. Okay, well, let's go back to your book. You've got what, 200 questions in there?
200 questions.
Christians ought to ask themselves.
Yep. 200 questions. See if I can pull this up here real quick.
Well, one of the questions I've written an article like that myself, and certainly not a book. And one of the questions that I ask is, why don't Christians ask themselves about the story of Garden of Eden? God didn't know that it was going to fail. Adam and Eve were like children. He told them that they would eat the fruit and they would die. They didn't die. He never said anything about spirituality in there. They didn't know death existed. It's just one thing after another. Plus, they were like children. They didn't know the difference between right and wrong. They didn't know if they didn't know the difference between right and wrong, they didn't know the difference. I mean, they wouldn't know that disobedience was wrong until they ate the apple. In other words, he was blaming them for something they didn't have the capability of understanding at the time that they disobeyed him. Anyway, Christians don't ask themselves that, and they don't ask themselves hundreds of questions, of which you put 200 of them together. Have you got one that you?
Yeah, I'm scrolling down here. I've got it on my phone here. I've let me pull it up here real quick. I need to see 5, 4, 3, 2, 1, and another one is what different emotions did you experience when you prayed the salvation prayer? And this kind of get them to recollect once again the emotional manipulation that took place, fear. Guilt, shame, hope, unconditional love, just this myriad of emotions, mm-hmm. just in a very effective way to get them to feel bad about the things they've done, and then they offer to take that bad feeling away.
Right.
It's kind of the Hegelian dialectic. You create the problem, then offer the solution.
Mm-hmm.
That seems to be able to be pretty effective in doing that.
Dan Barker says, would you buy a bandage from somebody who comes up and cuts you in order to sell you a bandage? Which is what the church does, basically.
Actually, most people would, because they're in desperate need of a bandage.
Yeah.
So yes, that is just that is definitely a good example of pointing out that the person who cuts you because he wanted to sell you a bandage. But most people would buy a bandage because they are bleeding.
Mm-hmm.
And that's just an example of how effective that tactic is.
Especially if they catch you young enough and make you believe it so deeply.
Yeah.
From your earliest childhood.
Yeah. They've said that, most childhood beliefs stick with you. I think it's maybe by the age of 7, if you can get somebody to believe something by the age of 7, you can mm-hmm. probably get it to stick with them.
Yeah.
I
think it was a bishop back in history, I can't remember his name, who said, give me the boy until he's 7 and I'll give you the man.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And some of us have been fortunate enough to break free of that.
Uh-huh.
It can be done. It took me maybe 3 years to be able to just come to terms that it was okay to say that I was an atheist.
Uh-huh.
Just I was so indoctrinated in the stigma against atheists out there. It took me 3 years just to be able to say it was okay to be an atheist.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, so
it's not one of these overnight things like going into a religion. These revelations, these emotional purging that you get to go into religion. I saw the light, I hit my knees, I now accept Jesus. Now the conditioning is so strong, it takes you years to come out of it, and some people never do.
Yeah.
So
Moving on to the next question. We would probably do maybe five segments of this. What do you think? Maybe sure. Five different shows.
Yeah. Okay. You can't read them the whole thing, or they wouldn't.
Yeah, I know, right? I've discovered that that's a pretty effective technique. You can maybe break it up into maybe several different segments, and you can actually read all of them in several different segments, and that kind of helps sell the book. Yeah, I initially didn't think that would be a good way to go about it because you're basically giving the book away. But uh-huh. if you break it up into enough segments, it's a good way to market it. Mm. There's several people of mine, several friends of mine who've done that. A couple next questions. Why are you a Christian? And why are you not a Muslim? And that just kind of gets people to examine the question of, if you grew up in a Muslim country, would you likely be a Muslim? And the answer to that, of course, is yes, because whatever religion you surround yourself with, or whatever belief systems you surround yourself with, you're more likely to absorb that because of peer pressure and groupthink than you are if you, expose yourself to different ideas.
Wow. Yeah. I hear you. Now, one thing that always got me was, we always hear about abominations like in the Bible. Homosexuality is an abomination. It's a deathly sin. It's something that basically puts your soul in jeopardy of hell. Yeah. But so is like eating shellfish.
I know, right?
And everybody does that. I mean,
all this trivial stuff.
Yeah, I mean, the way they pick and choose from the Bible to support the preconceived notions, they don't like homosexuality, so it's an abomination because the Bible says so.
Basically, because they think it's gross and they're glad that God's grossed out by it too. So mm-hmm. they're just kind of that's pretty much the mentality of most. Most people who are prejudiced against homosexuality, mm-hmm. They're not incredibly attracted to it. They're not attracted to the same sex, and it makes them feel weird. It makes them feel uncomfortable. So whenever they encounter something that reinforces their own, prejudice against somebody, they're like, yeah, I have a reason to be a bigot. Yeah. My bigotry is justified, mm-hmm. so I'm gonna stick with this. That's kind of their mentality.
Yeah. But I also noticed that God, although he had an opportunity to, he could do anything, he didn't happen to make slavery an abomination.
Yeah.
There's all kinds of examples where God had nothing to say about the wrongness of slavery.
Yep.
They even tells people in the Bible how to sell their daughter into slavery, what to charge for them, when to be able to come out of slavery, things like that.
Yeah. But the Bible isn't necessarily exceptionally kind to women. It's not like I think one feminist said that in the women's rights movement said that in the quest for equality that the Bible was hurled at them at every turn. Especially if you're female and you're a Christian, you're kind of. It's kind of like a Stockholm syndrome kind of thing where you accept your lower status, you accept your submissive mm-hmm. servitude, things like that,
mm-hmm. and all because of a sin that really couldn't have happened. I mean, there was no Adam and Eve if evolution is true, but that's why they've got to fight it so much as they do. Evolution is true. It's the backbone of modern biology and modern medicine. Yet the Christians or the evangelicals, the religious people, can't have that because it would invalidate the original sin. And that would mean that we're not sinners and that we don't need a sacrifice to clear that sin. We've got about 15 minutes left in the show. If you'd like to call in, the phone number is 865-333-5937. 333-5937. And another thing about cherry picking the Bible, that pretty much proves that morality doesn't come from the Bible. Because if it did, then Christians and evangelicals and the people who follow the Bible would follow everything in the Bible. I mean, if their moral, as they claim, really came from the Bible, then their Bible would be their instruction book. But it's not. They pick and choose what they like to follow and what they don't like to follow.
And actually, I think that it's very good to pick and choose in the Bible what you do follow and what you don't follow, because as much as I think that the Bible is full of errors and just bad advice, there are some good things in it. I will admit that.
Well, there such are as, in such most
as,
books.
Yeah, exactly, you know, right. Such as the whole
God breathed.
Yeah, I know. Such as the whole golden rule thing. You know, treat people the way you want to be treated. Mm-hmm. However, you can improve upon that. There's a golden rule, which basically says you treat people the way you want to be treated. There's a platinum rule, which is a bit more secular version of it, which says you treat people the way they want to be treated, mm-hmm. because not everybody wants to be treated the way you right. want to be treated.
Right.
That's a very self. Mm-hmm. As much as it is a good policy to treat people the way you want to be treated, it's kind of a more selfish approach, mm-hmm. as opposed to other-centered treatment of people.
Right. You know? If you follow Jesus's rule, then if you're a masochist, you'd go around hitting people yeah. and causing them pain,
yeah.
because that's the way you would want
exactly.
to be
changed. Not everybody likes hugs. Yeah. Some people are just mm-hmm. some people are huggers.
Right.
And some people do not want to be touched.
Mm-hmm.
So if you're somebody who likes to hug people,
there are better rules.
Yeah, and you go up and start hugging everybody. Here's a clear example of this. There's somebody in my life. I'm not going to say who, because I'll just say somebody in my life that I met, and her father-in-law. She kept calling him Mr. Blank. Mr. his last name, and he was like, "Don't call me that. It makes me feel old. Call me by my first name." And it would not go through her head. It would not get into her head that he didn't like her calling him that. And one of the reasons is she was raised with this whole, you know, respect your elders kind of mentality, mm-hmm. that you call your elders Mr. this, mm-hmm. Mr. that, and she was just so.
It was ingrained.
It was so ingrained in her mm-hmm. head that she didn't realize that. He hated it.
It was an exception.
I know. Mm-hmm. He's basically telling her, do not do this. Do not treat me this way. And she couldn't see past her own, you know, just rule-based, this is the way you treat people.
Authoritarian.
Kind of mentality.
Yeah.
And she was just blind to the way this guy wanted to be treated.
Mm-hmm.
He's basically saying, no, don't do this. And she just kept doing it. Yeah. I almost wanted to take her aside and explain it to her if I didn't want to embarrass her in front of everybody.
Yeah.
You know?
Mm-hmm. Getting back to the questions that Christians won't ask themselves, I always wondered why they didn't understand that faith just doesn't work. I mean, they say they have to have faith in their religion, you know, to practice their religion. They have to have faith that what's in the Bible is true. Well, every religion on earth says the same thing. You've got to have faith to believe that what's in our holy book is true, and they're mutually exclusive. But they all require faith. I mean, it just doesn't make sense, but they won't think about it or don't care to think about it. It's crazy.
Yeah, another good thing to point out, and I think you've already touched on this already, is that if you need faith to believe something, there may not be any good reason to believe it.
Well, it's a, what do you call it? You're confessing, basically, that you don't have
a good reason.
That you don't have a good reason. Because if you had a good reason, you would
need faith.
You would express that reason instead of saying, I don't have a good reason, I'm just going to do it on faith. You know, it's a confession to that point.
Yeah.
What other good questions should we ask?
So here, what we got now?
I've got one.
Okay, so go ahead.
If God is everywhere, and they always say he is, he's every place, observing everything, then where the heck was he when the serpent was tempting Eve? I mean, this is the most critical juncture in the history of humanity, and he's nowhere to be found. What is he doing? Just playing mind games with the human race?
He's taking a nap. It was a Sunday.
Yeah.
He was resting.
And then, to prove that he's just playing with us, is when he finally comes back and they've already eaten the apple, he's like walking through the garden. Where are you guys? Where are you? I don't know where you got. What?
Just messing with their heads.
Yeah, I mean, this is a guy who's omnipotent and omnipresent.
Yeah.
He doesn't know where they are. Sorry. He just like he was trying to play a game and set a trap.
Yeah, and the Bible's inconsistent here. It basically says that God was walking in the garden.
Right.
Like he was in human form.
Yeah, I hope he didn't stub his toe or anything.
I know, right? Seriously.
I mean,
catch a thorn or something. Yeah.
But really, if you think about it, the reason that God has so many different names in the Bible is that because they pulled the text of the Bible from so many different sources and so many different religions early on, that they all have gods and they call them different things, but then they pull them together and put them in stories. And it's like Emmanuel. You know, it was predicted that a child named Emmanuel would be born of a virgin.
Yeah.
And well, Jesus' name was not Emmanuel. Now, they'll tell you that, they'll make up something about why it wasn't Emmanuel. But, I mean, it wasn't part of the prediction, the prophecy. And even today, that we have the entire Jewish religion who doesn't believe that Jesus was the one prophesied. They have reasons, but Christians won't ask themselves about that region, those reasons.
Regarding the name Emmanuel, which means God with us, that's what it means, right? Mm-hmm. God with us. I have somebody I know in my life that basically said that he just told all his family members that God told him to name his son Emmanuel.
Mm-hmm.
God told him to name his son Emmanuel.
Oh, really?
And this is the kind of guy who's just, this is endemic of Christian thinking. This guy has basically been a lifelong criminal. Don't get me wrong, he has his reasons because he was very much abused by his father. And this is kind of a cycle of, abuse and drug use and criminality to feed the drug habit. But, he does have, there are reasons he is the way he is. However, he is still, out there committing crimes. And one of the facets of his mentality is that he thinks that Jesus has forgiven him. So basically what he does is he does all these horrible things and then asks for forgiveness and his slate is wiped clean and he has no responsibilities to anything of, accountability to, be responsible for his own actions because the devil made him do it.
Well, sure.
He has somebody to blame if he does something bad and he has somebody to forgive him if he does something good.
Yeah. Now, so, I always ask people, so, well, you know, if I'm talking to a believer and they say, well, you just want to do what you want to do. You just want to sin. You just want to live a life of sin.
No.
I tell them, I said, well, what's the difference of me living the life I want to do and not worrying about heaven and hell because I don't believe in souls? Or you being a Christian, doing whatever you want to do and asking for forgiveness?
Yeah.
What's the difference?
Flip the switch on them.
Well, the difference is you feel like you can be absolved of your bad actions. Yeah. I don't. I have to live with the consequences of my actions. And if, like I say, when it comes down to forgiveness, if they wrong somebody, if they trespass against a person, they can go into their room and kneel down by the bed and ask Jesus for forgiveness. What does that do for the person that they harmed?
Not a thing.
Nothing. But you and I know that if we hurt somebody, we have to get forgiveness from that person or live with the consequences of our actions.
We have a responsibility to the person we wronged.
Right.
As they think they can get vicarious redemption from a third party that's not involved in the slight or the harm that takes place.
And consider Catholicism. They've ritualized it. If you don't go to church on Sunday and confess your sins.
Indulgences and so forth.
Yeah, and sell your indulgences. In other words, you give the money to the priest and they let you do your sin and forgive you for it. I mean, just how asinine is that? But this is what religion brings to you. A totalitarian system where you can buy exceptions from the authority.
Yeah.
Crazy. Anyway, we've got about 5 more minutes. Do you have anything that you want to get into before we...
I guess I'll just go ahead and just go through my list of books I've written so far.
Sorry,
and kind of get that out there in the radio interview. Mm-hmm. My first one was called Nothing Sacred, an Atheist Quoted a Calendar. Next one was called Blasphemy, Atheist Quotes and Essays by an Apostate. Next was Unreal News, a Collection of Satire. After that was 10 Decisions I Could Have Been Better Than God and Other Audacious Atheist Articles. After that was One Big Joke and 300 Shorter Ones. Then was Law of Attraction Plus Action and Winning Combination for Success. After that, Seeds of Doubt, 200 questions every Christian needs to answer. And my latest one is No Church for Me, The Best of Mike Cook. All those can be found on Amazon, and two of them, One Big Joke and 10 Decisions, can be found on Audible.
Okay. Now, John, is that a pseudonym or?
Yes, my name is John D. Webster. Okay. My name is John D. Webster.
Because if they go to Amazon,
I know, right? You might find one book. You got to go to the right name.
Yeah.
My birth name is John D. Webster. I go by the pseudonym John D. Bold. From my last two books, I've gone with John D. Bold. One of the reasons is when I was in college, I took a personality test and actually had my friends. There's a list of 50 different words they could choose from to describe me, and the overwhelmingly number one choice by far was the word bold.
Mm.
And that's kind of
a big pseudonym. Really,
it's kind of one of the ways I operate. Yeah. You know, I think it's kind of cool that I have that quality, but you know, that's just kind of the way I operate.
It takes a little bit of boldness to do stand-up comedy.
Yeah, I know, right?
You've been doing some of that lately, haven't
yeah.
you?
So yeah, it just kind of suits me, and I think I'm going to run with it.
No, very good. We've got another minute or so I'm going to mention my book, I guess. Larry S. Rhodes is my real name instead of Doubter 5. Doubter. And you can find my book on Amazon as well. It's called Atheism, What's It All About? And I've got basically all of my articles from my blog in there. And this show itself is called DigitalFreeThought.com. I'm sorry, Digital Free Thought Radio Hour. And if you go to DigitalFreeThought.com, you can read many of those articles.
And I think that Larry has actually probably sold more books than I have, and he has more reviews of than my books. So I'm just going to put that out there. So this guy's done a better job marketing than I have with mine.
Well,
if I can learn some secrets from you, it'll be done in a while.
Okay, I'm going to try to find the music to outplay here. And we're going to close on out with a song called Why Don't Bees Go to Heaven by Save the Enlightenment. I hope you enjoy it, and we'll see you next week. Say bye.
See ya. Glad to be on.
Okay, and we're off.
Good job, man. Good job.
No, thank you. I appreciate it.
Yeah.
No. And you're welcome to come here anytime.
Sounds good, man. We just
Riv usually comes too.
Who's that?
Riv River.
Yeah.
Yeah, he's one of the new board members.
Okay. Cool. I probably need to get back to work because they
okay.
They say the get back questions I could
close out things and stuff.
Cool, man. Thanks for having me on.
Well, thank you.
Appreciate you. Thanks for inviting me.
Anytime.
Yeah. I'll get back out there.
Okay.
See you, man.
All right. Take care.
Ha ha ha.